so wonderful to be in the same room with so many Lutherans. I know that here in Pennsylvania, this is no big deal, but I live in Maine, where there are very few Lutherans. Garrison Keillor once commented that the difference between a Lutheran in Pennsylvania and a Lutheran in Maine is like the difference between a penguin in Antarctica and a penguin in a zoo. So we have a few specimens up there, but that's about it. There are only 17 congregations in the entire state, 17 Lutheran congregations, and they are all small, all worship 100 or less, and they get even smaller in the winter when the summer people leave. But here's a fact that I know you'll enjoy. The majority of Lutherans who either summer in Maine or have retired in Maine come from Pennsylvania. So thank you for sharing some of your Lutherans with us, or else there may be no Lutherans in Maine at all. But it's not just the fact that you are all Lutherans that makes it so fun for me to be here. It's also the fact that every one of you in this room has answered the call to serve as a leader in God's church. Just think of all the confirmation and adult classes that have been taught by the people in this room. Think of all the youth events and mission trips that have been carried out. Think of all the sermons that have been prepared and preached, and all the council and committee meetings that have been attended. There is so much collected experience, biblical scholarship, wisdom, and commitment to God's church seated in this room today. But this church that we love and serve is struggling. It is struggling to be reborn. And right now, we are experiencing the labor pains. The birthing process is happening on our watch. And it's almost like as leaders, we are being called to be Lamas, coaches, or midwives as we help the church be born, as we help our congregations live through the anxiety of the labor period of birth, so that a new kind of church can emerge out of Christianity's rich and ancient gene pool. Now, this afternoon, we are going to take a look at some research around the changing dynamics in the generational landscape. This research can help us, it can equip us to be more effective midwives and coaches in this rebirthing process, especially when it comes to inspiring generosity. And I think it's just sort of fun that as we think about rebirth, we happen to be gathered in a place called Bethlehem. So here's what we're dealing with. We are called to nurture faith in people from Lillian's generation, and people in her great-grandson, Adam's generation, and all the generations in between. Now, you have probably heard the story about the blackboard in Albert Einstein's classroom. It was covered with all sorts of complicated mathematical equations, but there was one simple equation that was circled. 2 + 2 = 4. And next to it was written, "Do not erase." So before we dig into all sorts of statistics and trends, I'd like to ground us in a verse from Psalm 100. Let's read it together. "For the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations." This is our "do not erase" verse. It reminds us that we are not in the delivery room alone. God is the one who is orchestrating this new birth, this reformation of the church. And we know that God has vast experience in bringing things to new birth. Now, there are many things that influence our values, our choices, our outlook, such as the home in which we grew up, our level of education, our economic status, and the place we live. But there is a great deal of research that shows us that the year in which we were born also has a profound impact on our attitudes, decisions, interests, and our preferences. So let's dig a little deeper into some of the traits and trends of the four broad generational groups that make up our congregations today. And then we're going to ask that quintessential Lutheran question, what does this mean? So first, we're going to take a look at the matures. We talked about them as the GI generation and the silent generation, but I'm grouping them together. They're everybody 69 and older. The matures are the dedicated generation. They grew up during the Great Depression, so they are frugal. They value saving and making do. They are also referred to as the traditionalist because they were raised in a very orderly society with clearly defined rules, roles, and functions. They value privacy and propriety, although this group up here might test the boundaries on that a little bit. Sharing very private thoughts can be challenging for them. They believe in honesty, loyalty, and paying their dues before their achievement is recognized. They work hard because it's the right thing to do. They are economically aware, generally very trustful of the government, and loyal to institutions. They are optimistic, patriotic, willing to sacrifice, and they believe that patience is a virtue. Now, the worldview of this generation was shaped by the Great Depression, World War II, the Korean War, the beginning of the atomic age, and the nuclear family. They grew up playing with things like doll babies, tin cars and trucks, wagons, homemade wooden toys, and books. Popular entertainment when they were growing up consisted of movie musicals that were filled with fantasy and optimistic hope, conservative love stories, and listening to music and soap operas on the radio. The news was filled with messages of a better future ahead and patriotism. TV, in black and white, was just beginning. Now let's take a look at some of the giving patterns and preferences of this generation and the way they use technology. In 2013, when this study was done, matures represented 26% of the total giving in the U.S. 88% gave financial gifts, averaging about $1,400 a year and spread over about six charities. Their preferences in giving were 50% giving to places of worship, over half giving to local social service agencies, and 72%, three-quarters, donating goods to charity. Their patterns in giving, over half of them respond to direct mail, and about a third give in honor or as a tribute or memorial. Now, how do our matures use technology? 60% use the internet for banking and 80% for email. 58% are on YouTube and 59% have a Facebook page. 30% use a mobile phone as their primary phone. 17% text. And 7%, the mobile phone is their only phone. So this idea that our matures are not technologically savvy is not correct. Now let's see how they use social media when it comes to giving. 12% view videos online about the charities or churches they support. 9% actually share information about causes that are important to them on social media. And 6% have actually fundraised for these charities via social media. So now we're going to look at the baby boomers. This is everyone age 50 through 68. Our matures were the dedicated generation. The boomers are the driven generation. In contrast to their predecessors, boomers grew up in a time of affluence and wealth. As a group, they are the healthiest and wealthiest generation up to this time, and they grew up genuinely expecting the world to improve. Boomers tended to think of themselves as a special generation, different from those who had gone before. But then the assassinations of the Kennedy brothers and Dr. Martin Luther King, who represented a lot of their liberal beliefs, deeply affected them. And this fueled the fire in boomers for rejecting rules and redefining traditional values. Boomers thought their parents' world needed an overhaul. And so they saw their role as one of questioning, justifying the need for change, and creating that change. Like matures, boomers value hard work. But boomers tend to see work as necessary for moving up the ladder, for getting ahead, not because it's the right thing to do. Boomers often tend to be workaholics, and they find climbing the ladder of success exciting. They tend to compete rather than cooperate with their peers. They're also very idealistic, and they will fight for a cause they believe in. Right now, health and personal growth are high priorities, especially as boomers begin to retire. Now, the worldview of baby boomers was shaped by such things as nuclear bombs, the Cold War, the Vietnam War, Watergate, the space race, and a man walking on the moon. We watched it on the television. Civil rights and hippie movements, and of course, Woodstock. The boomers grew up playing with Barbie dolls, hula hoops, electric trains, Hot Wheels, board games, sleds, and they did a lot of riding their bikes. Popular entertainment consisted of much more realistic movies with some unhappy endings. Listening to rock music, idolizing rock groups like the Beatles, and watching lots of TV in color. Now let's take a look at the boomers' giving patterns and preferences. In 2013, boomers represented 43% of the total giving in the U.S. 72% gave financial gifts, average about $1,200 a year, and spread over 4.5 charities. Their preferences remain the same as their parents, but the percentages started to drop a little. In terms of their patterns of giving, we see a new pattern in this generation of giving through their workplace and a preference for monthly giving. Use of technology. As you can see, technology is growing, and the boomers added a new category when it comes to using social media, with nearly half of them using LinkedIn. When it comes to their giving and social media, here we see increasing percentages for supporting charities via the web. Next, let's look at Generation X. These are people age 34 to 49, and it was exciting to me to see that we had quite a few of them here today. They are the balanced generation. They grew up in a very different world from their boomer parents. Divorce and working moms created a lot of latchkey kids out of this generation. This led to traits of independence, resilience, and adaptability. Like boomers, Gen Xers work hard, but not so much to get ahead. It's more to be in control of balancing their lives and managing their own time. They work to live. They don't live to work. Gen X is the first of the tech generations. Most of them grew up with home computers. They can be discouraged about society, but they are adept, they are clever, and they are resourceful. And there is a little bohemian tinge to their lifestyles, and they also tend to be spiritual seekers. Gen X is very comfortable with change. They highly value flexibility and freedom, which translates to a need for autonomy in the workplace and a dislike for supervisors or really anybody micromanaging them or looking over their shoulder. They accept diversity and they work well in multicultural settings. They prefer a more casual, friendly work environment with some fun added in the mix. They have a pragmatic approach to getting things done, and they see their workplace as a place to learn. Gen X saw their parents get laid off or face job insecurity. Many of them also entered the workplace in the early 80s when the economy was in a downturn. Because of these factors, they do not trust institutions for long-term security and have redefined workplace loyalty. Instead of remaining loyal to their organization, they have a commitment to the work, to their team, and to their boss. While they take work and employment seriously, they're not attached to climbing the ladder in the same way as the boomers were. They are very happy to move laterally, to simply stop for a while, and then begin the climb again. Now, the worldview of Generation X was shaped by things like the space shuttle explosion, the fall of the Berlin Wall and communism, the Persian Gulf War, AIDS, and wide use of computers and the internet. They grew up playing with things like the Rubik's Cube, Transformers, Cabbage Patch Dolls, handheld video games, and early TV video games, a host of Barbie dolls, and theme toys based on TV characters. Popular entertainment consisted a lot of watching things. Adventure movies, superhero movies, Sesame Street, Nickelodeon, and MTV. Let's look at their giving patterns. Gen X in 2013 represented 20% of the total giving in the United States. 59% gave financial gifts, averaging around $700 a year and spread over about four charities. Their preferences. Here we see preferences continuing to change and a new preference among Gen X for giving to health charities. In addition, in this survey, 49% of our Gen Xers noted that it is very important to them to be able to see the impact of their giving. And here, look at their patterns. Giving through the workplace is continuing to rise in this generation, and we also see some new patterns. They like to give through retail purchase, such as Tom's Shoes, where you buy one pair of shoes and a needy person gets another pair of shoes. And they also love to fundraise on behalf of an organization. As you might suspect, the use of technology is continuing to rise by quite a bit. And also, we've added a couple of new uses for the internet. Over half of our Gen Xers use it for shopping and for listening to music. And their giving when it comes to social media, again, is rising. Now, let's look at Generation Y. Generation Y is the determined generation. They are referred to as Generation Y because they always want to know the reason why. Why should they do this or that? Why does it matter? Why do they have to do it the way you did it? Gen Y was raised in the most child-centric time in our history. Showers of attention and high expectations from their parents have fostered a great deal of self-confidence among this generation. They are hardworking, but their motivation for working hard is to make a difference and to make some money along the way. They are entrepreneurial multitaskers, and they are always asking, okay, what's next? What's next? In the workplace, they are difficult for some of our older generations because they are always challenging the standard operating procedures because they think it's just fine to skip the traditional steps in order to achieve what they want. They question things like seniority, believing that the best person for the job is the one who can do the job the best, not the one who's been there the longest. Rather than reject the rules, they rewrite the rules. They prefer a structured, supportive work environment that encourages interactive relationships. They value working with a team of bright, creative people more than any kind of individual endeavor. Because they are used to a lot of personal attention from their parents and other adults in their family, they often need and respond well to mentoring. They expect to have a personal relationship with their boss, which doesn't always mesh very well with the Gen X bosses who like a hands-off style. Because Gen X grew up in a world that was boiling with economic, political, and social uncertainty, they not only are distrustful of institutions, they think institutions are irrelevant. They do not blindly or automatically offer their respect or allegiance to anyone or anything. Compared to our older generations, they place much greater demands on institutions and workplaces for accountability, transparency, and fairness. Generation-wise, they are the technology natives. They grew up with the internet, laptops, and mobile phones, so they are the first generation that has not had to adapt to using technology. It is their first language. Technology is all they have ever known, and it is embedded in every aspect of their lives. This generation is also known as the thumbers for how fast they can work their keyboards. On the whole, they have a unique familiarity and intimacy with technology that vastly exceeds their predecessors. Gen Y tends to anticipate new technologies and accept and adopt them readily as long as they work for them. They are comfortable with and even prefer learning via online technology than a traditional classroom setting. Now, while patience is a virtue for the matures, patience is a huge challenge for Generation Y. They want to see immediate results and action. They are frustrated by the seconds that it takes for a document to download, something that would have taken 10 years to research, or weeks to research 10 years ago. They connect and they are networked with their friends, their colleagues, and their causes via social media. Text messages, instant messaging, Facebook, blogging, and Twitter keep them in constant contact with friends. Online social networks are the building blocks of their social action. And they are very capable, and it's kind of routine for them to manage huge, complex social networks on the internet. Because Generation Y is the most racially diverse generation in American history, they are more multicultural, more internationalist in outlook, and more socially tolerant than our older generations. They not only accept diversity, they celebrate diversity. They tend to be liberal when it comes to politics and social issues such as immigration, gay marriage, and interracial dating. They are the first generation that is in no hurry to marry. 1 in 5 of our Gen Ys in this survey said that they have no religious affiliation or are atheist or agnostic. Nearly double the proportion of people who answered the questions that way in the late 1980s. Only 58% say they are absolutely certain that God exists, and just 4% say that people in their generation view growing spiritually as an important goal in life. 80% say that people in their generation think getting rich is either the first or the second goal in their lives. However, this is going to be challenging for our Gen Ys. Even though they are highly educated, the goal of financial prosperity is going to be difficult because they have come out of school with huge student loans. In addition, many are underemployed and are struggling financially because of the longer-term effects of globalization and the rapid changes in the workplace due to technology. However, in spite of the fact that they have lower levels of wealth and personal income than other generations at their age, they are very optimistic about the future. The worldview of Generation Y was shaped by an unprecedented revolution in technology, the impeachment of President Clinton and other government scandals, the breakup of the Soviet Union, and dramatic events such as 9/11, the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009, Occupy Wall Street, and the war in Iraq. Our Gen Ys grew up playing with TV system games, video and computer games, skateboards, inline skates, a seemingly endless variety of Barbies, and many toys that made girls seem grown up, and toys based on themes from TV superhero shows. Popular entertainment consisted of the rebirth of many Disney and family movies, teenage-specific movies, a lot of home video, DVD movies, superstars in movies, and something new, reality TV, that made everyday people household names. Now let's look at the giving. In 2013, Generation Y represented 11% of the total giving, with 60% making financial gifts, averaging about $500 a year, spread over three charities. Their preferences are interesting. We see a new preference for giving to children's charities and a growing desire to see the impact of their giving. And it's important to note that we no longer see a preference to give through one's place of worship or to social service agencies. In terms of patterns, as you might expect, we see increasing percentages using technology, growing numbers of those giving to their work, giving through retail purchase, and giving through fundraising. In terms of use of technology, we can see it continue to climb, with over half watching videos and connecting via Twitter, a new one that we added to the list. And then, giving in social media. Over half of our Gen Ys are using social media for their giving. So now, what does all this mean? Well, we're going to be talking about it tomorrow together because we need to think about this as a group. But let's just look at one very important part of our life together in congregations, our communication methods, the way we keep our people informed, okay? The way we connect to them. The matures prefer formal communication. Although many matures use email and mobile phones, they are most comfortable with face-to-face communication, letters, or phone calls. Clear, concise messages are good, but short, curt messages may seem rude to them. They are the group that is most likely to appreciate and read a church newsletter or a written copy of a sermon. Then we have our baby boomers. They get their information via email and a phone message. They respect letters, but because their lives are so busy, those letters can get put in that pile of mail that they just never get a chance to read. So they tend to check the church website for information as they're rushing off to the church rather than read the newsletter. Then we have our Generation X. They prefer an informal communication style and like their messages in short, understandable bites. They are most comfortable with email and texting. They might quickly browse through an electronic version of the newsletter, but they prefer short weekly email updates or a text reminder. Then there's our Generation Ys. They want concise action words, and it's important to emphasize that whatever you're asking them to do is going to be fun and worth their time. Humor can be used with this group to get a message across, but their humor is not always understood by other generations. This group likes all senses to be stimulated. They want colors and movement and music. They want to respond quickly via Facebook, instant messaging, texting. That is their preferred method. And I thought this was a fascinating fact. Many in this generation have never used a postage stamp. Last year, I worked in a congregation with a young Gen X pastor. He was 35 years old. And as you might expect, he is very diligent about trying to maintain the balance between his work at church and his family life. His day off is Friday. And if you send him an email on Thursday night or Friday, you will instantly receive an automatic reply. And this is what it says. Hello. Thank you for your message. I spend Thursday evening through Friday at home with my family entertaining the glorious Sabbath bride. I do not check email on that day. If this is a pressing emergency, you can reach me at this number. Examples of pressing emergencies are death, hospitalization, emotional trauma, news of a free concert ticket giveaway, discovery of previously unknown magical powers, and zombie apocalypse. Examples of things that are important but not pressing are ennui, a question about the authorship of the book of 2 Peter, a desire to check an item off your to-do list, and dyspepsia. I look forward to responding to your message as soon as possible. Our younger generations prefer to communicate via technology, not just with the church, but with any group. They talk online, they go shopping online, they watch movies online, they listen to music online, they play games online, take classes online, you name it. They do it online. So the challenge before us, my friends, is how do we get on their screen? I mean, literally. Now, a lot of shifts have taken place. Did I get there yet? There we go. And the younger a person is, the stronger the shift is. First of all, there has been a shift in the method of giving. Giving by cash or check has shifted to electronic giving, and most of it by credit card. And this is not just with our youngest members. This is all across the board. Online giving appeals to all generations. This means that the offering plate and simply giving can no longer be the primary ways that we provide for financial contributions to our churches. A few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I was interviewing a young 20-something gal in a congregation in the Boston area, and we were talking about things she loved about her church, and then we talked about things she would like to see changed. And she said, you know, the thing I hate the most is the offering. I just hate the offering. It is so awkward. I never carry cash in my purse. I don't have a checkbook. I pay all my bills online. So if the only way you offer me to give to the church is through the offering plate, you're going to get the change in the bottom of my purse. So, receiving of the offering via the offering plate on Sunday morning needs to become only one of many, many different ways that we encourage generous giving to our churches. Perhaps the time of the offering can start to morph to a time in our worship services where we meditate on the many ways we have been blessed. We take a moment to thank God for our abundance, and we maybe have someone that we've helped through our congregation or that is involved in some ministries get up and give us an update on the difference our generous offerings are making in the world. Clearly, we need to provide a lot of different ways to be generous, and church websites absolutely have to be one of them. Your website is a powerful tool for engaging your people and for encouraging and inspiring generosity across the generations. It is essential. It's not just nice. It's essential for congregations to have an up-to-date website that has a give button right on the front page. And it has to provide ways to contribute via electronic transfer, credit card, PayPal, Google Wallet, whatever vehicle your people are using, it needs to be up there. Thrivent has a wonderful program to help congregations get electronic giving up on their websites. Websites have become a crucial part of a congregation's overall ministry. If you have a website, or if you don't have a website, just invite a few tech-savvy Generation Ys from your congregation to work as a team, possibly even with a professional website designer, to either strengthen the effectiveness of your website or get one up and running. It may cost a bit of money, but believe me, our younger generations are coming to your website before they ever come to your front door. And based on what they see on that website, they'll decide if they're going to visit on a Sunday morning. So look at that website and make sure it represents visually, musically, age group-wise, who you are and what you believe in, what causes you are trying to support, because that is what will drive them in. The second, not drive them in, invite them in. Oh, boy. The second shift we see is in the motivation for giving. Giving out of duty and delight has shifted to giving in order to make a difference and see an impact. Our younger generations ask pointed questions about the return on investment of the things we're doing, and they are not okay with superficial answers. This means that we have to be very diligent in helping people see how the money they give to our congregation is changing lives. So the agenda at our annual meeting can no longer be focused on discussing and improving a line item budget. Rather, at those annual meetings, we need to focus on joyfully sharing the stories of how we have made a difference in the last year and why we feel called to take on some specific new initiative or outreach in the new year. But this brings us to another issue we have to consider. Our youngest generations do not stay informed about the causes they support through attending meetings, even our wonderful, exciting, inspiring annual meetings. They stay connected and they follow the causes they support through websites, interactive blogs, Facebook, and YouTube. This means that it is increasingly important that our congregations work to strengthen their online presence. And this really does become a staffing issue. If we are serious about reaching out to these younger generations, we need to hire someone from Gen X or Y to help us learn how to do church online, to help us think not so much out of the box, but out of the building. For example, if you want to cultivate a meaningful relationship with the 20 or 30-somethings in your congregation, you do not have to visit them in your home, in their home. You don't have to take them for lunch. All you have to do is simply send them a friend request on Facebook. Then visit their Facebook page and read some of it and comment on some of the things that they post. You will be amazed at their response. First of all, they will be so shocked to see that you actually read what they had written. They want to connect with their pastor via social media. This is a huge role for pastors today, to be mentors for this age group. If you want to encourage this group to be involved in your ministries and your programs, put together a team and ask them to create a YouTube about something you're hoping to do. If the YouTube video contains some humor, that would be fabulous. And then text the link to your Gen X's and Gen Y's, put it in your email updates, and if they like it, they will share it with all their friends. And if it's really good, it could even go viral. The potential for online evangelism, sharing the good news, is really astonishing. The next shift is from the places people give. It shifted from giving to institutions to giving to causes. Part of the shift is due to the increasing distrust over how institutions handle the money they receive. And this means that we have to provide a great deal more transparency, clarity, and education about where our money in our congregations goes. And we have to emphasize a lot the causes that we are promoting, not just the budget that we're asking people to give to. Our younger generation enjoy walkathons, fun runs, cycling races. They're participating in these things in their workplaces, and we should be offering these things through our congregation. Crop walk still really works. Fundraising initiatives that blend shopping with doing good like Serve or Gifts of Hope are also especially attractive to our Generation X and Y's. And there's a new thing, at least it's newer to me in our capital fundraising, and that is crowdfunding. Crowdfunding via platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo is becoming increasingly popular among our younger generations. Crowdfunding sites allow people with a great idea or a worthy cause to bypass traditional fundraising methods and go directly to web-savvy donors and investors. These crowdfunding platforms make giving immediate, direct, and personal. You can share and promote your favorite projects via your social networks. You can see real-time results as your causes are funded, and you get to interact with the beneficiaries of your gifts. And often there are incentives, like t-shirts and things. Crowdfunding aligns especially well with the values of Generation Y. It's fun, it's cool, It's social, and it establishes a direct link between the giver and the outcome. Our younger generations are using these sites to discover charities and causes that they care about. They just scroll through them and decide which ones are in line with their values, and they make a $5 gift or a $10 gift. Crowdfunding is a new and it's a powerful tool for inspiring generosity in our younger people. Our younger generations are putting their own causes on there. They're saying, here's what I'm passionate about. Step up and join me. They're not at all shy about asking people to support their causes they believe in. So really, they are naturals at encouraging generosity. I want to share an example with you. In our little congregation in Maine, where we have very few young people, we were having a walkathon to raise money for our local food pantry. Now, most of we older walkers had collected pledges for about between $50 and $100. Well, one of our Gen Yers decided to put it on the web. And he wrote up the cause. He talked about how important it was to feed hungry people in Maine. He said how passionate he was about it. He explained it all. He raised over $700 for our walkathon, more than all the rest of us together. He got contributions from all over the United States, Canada, and one from Ireland. For a great example of how this would work for your church, go to the website for St. Lydia's Church in Brooklyn, New York, and read about how they raised over $33,000 for the renovation of their new building on Indiegogo. This is a whole new world of supporting the causes that we believe so much in. Next, there's been another shift from the way people give. According to boomers and matures, money is the most important way to give. But our younger generations believe they can make the biggest impact by volunteering and by spreading the word to others about the causes they support. One really surprising thing that I've noticed as we are preparing for capital campaigns and congregation is how much our younger generations love to do fundraising. They are energized by it, and they will organize these fundraisers. They say that they love the way working together gives them a chance to know the other people in the congregation better, and they are energized by the fact they are actually working to support their congregation and the causes the congregation supports. Now, this means that if we want to encourage this way of being generous in our younger generations, we need to rethink some of the policies that we have that prohibit doing any kind of fundraising that supports the operating budget or the ongoing ministries of the church. Fifth, another change is this. There's been a shift from resistance to talking about money in the church to a desire to talk about money in the church. Now, it's not the church's need for money that they want to talk about, but they want to talk about how to faithfully handle money. Generation Y, as well as many others across the generations, are struggling with financial stress that's been created by the economic downturn. This has created a need and a desire for safe, casual, informative conversation and discussion about personal finance, about managing money, about credit card debt, and guidance when it comes to giving to the church. In addition, many of our baby boomers are looking for guidance in how charitable giving might be part of their retirement planning and their legacy giving. So the time has come for offering regular small groups and adult education classes on financial planning and retirement planning for our people of faith who really want to be faithful stewards of their financial resources. And last, there's been a shift that you're very aware of already from long-term general committee-type commitments to short-term specific commitments, and this applies to giving as well. Our younger generations want to be involved in things that can make a difference, and they appreciate it being asked to give of their time, their expertise, and their financial resources, but the ask needs to be specific. They are inspired by that overall vision, but they want to know how their contribution, whatever amount it is, is going to make an impact. Now, in addition to all these generations we've talked about, we have Generation Z. We had one over there, a little boomlet against the wall. They are our youngest members, our junior and senior high youth, and our little preschoolers and everybody in between, and they are in their formative years right now. So what is shaping their outlook? Their worldview is being shaped by things like global warming, Arab Spring, the economic downturn, and all those home foreclosures. Many of those children were part of those home foreclosures. Cloud computing, Google Glass, whatever that is, 3D printing, and driverless cars. Wow. But our teenagers, our confirmands, they are still looking for the same thing we were looking for at their age. They are looking for something to give their lives to. They are looking for a relationship with a life-changing God. And if they don't find that God in our Christian churches, they will most certainly settle for lesser gods elsewhere. So it is crucial that we offer these stewards information more than pizza. In the midst of all these generational shifts, there is another thing that has not changed: the importance of cultivating and maintaining meaningful, authentic relationships, of staying in touch with our people. Faith is passed on through relationships, and so is generosity. The way we cultivate these relationships can take many different forms, from a pastoral visit with a mature couple in their home, to having lunch with a busy baby boomer near their workplace, to going on a hike with some of our balance-seeking Generation Xers, to commenting on the Facebook post of our Gen Yers. Our call is to nurture faith and generosity from generation to generation. It is a huge challenge, but you know what? It's also a gift. Think about it. Outside individual family gatherings or reunions, where else in society do we have all these generations gathered together in one place? Together, we have everything we need to help God's church be born anew. In our older generations, we have the wisdom that comes from a lifetime of experience and the deep faith that comes from years of traveling with God. And we have their lifetime of giving generously to the church and their desire to continue doing it. In our younger generations, we have all their technological knowledge and fresh ideas, along with their energy and exuberance. So let's seize the day. Let's seize this opportunity we have to gather our generations together, get them working together so that we can discern timely, vibrant ways to share a timeless, vital faith and discover new ways to lead all of our generations into generous living, that life that is life indeed.
Isn't that great?